across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for all of your nice emails. More emails, I think, recently than I've ever had on the show. Really good to have those coming in. And it's a mix these days from people who've been listening for years and have only just decided to get in touch after like 10 years. Nice to hear from you. People who have been listening for years and contributing for years, and people who've just discovered the show and are telling their friends about it. Keep spreading the word. Nice to hear from regular listeners like Krina. Nice to hear from people I'm hearing from the first time from, like Mary in Canada. Good to hear from Stuart and Richard and so many others. And Carl, nice to hear from you too. And Kevin and Rob and so many people. If your email requires a specific response, then it will get one. Please bear with me, though. I'm absolutely inundated. It's a lovely position to be in. Inundated with emails at the moment. Please keep them coming in because, it makes me feel that it's all worth it. It keeps me going. It stokes my fires. Guest on this edition, this is my radio show conversation that I know that you would want to hear with the great Paul Sinclair of the Truth Proof Books fame. Paul, of course, based in East Yorkshire, spreading his remit even further these days. So we're talking North Yorkshire, East Yorkshire, and many other places. So we'll talk about the Truth Proof research and a lot of other stuff, including his new documentary that he's involved in. We'll bring you an update on his work and some new information. Thank you for being part of my show. Remember, the website is theunexplained.tv, designed and created by Adam. That's where you can follow the link and send me an email message if you want to. Tell me who you are, where you are, and how you use the show. Remember, and also my Facebook page, the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. Please go there now, check it out, and leave a comment if you'd like. Right, let's get to the guest who was on my radio show last night, the full conversation, unexpurgated, with Paul Sinclair. So what's going on with you at the moment then, Paul? What's new?
Well, despite lockdown and everything that that entails, Howard, things have just been as active as ever. Obviously, Unexplained Phenomena doesn't respect any of those rules. And I've got people contacting me, I won't say every week, probably every day with bits of information. And they're not people I know, they're not sort of, I don't have a group, an active group of people who I sort of visit these woodlands and forests and cliff tops with. And it's just growing. It's just spreading. I think people have found a place. I'm not the only person, I realise, where they can come with this information and I'll treat it in an unbiased way. You know, even if I don't believe what they're saying, I won't insult them. I'll just quietly not use it.
Right. I mean, look, it's good that people can feel that they have somebody they can approach who is not going to judge them, because we've all had experiences that we think, was that something weird or wasn't it? And to be able to run it past somebody non-judgmentally who's interested in these things and might be able to help with a few answers, I think is a very, very valuable thing. And I think that's what you've tapped into.
Yeah, I think so, Howard. You know, and I really appreciate the people being brave enough to come forward with their accounts. I mean, some of the people we've got for the documentary Wolflands, I mean, I've never met them before this. And I've said before, they're from all walks of life and they don't know each other, from different parts of the country. Some have just happened to have been in the forests of North Yorkshire on camping expeditions and other things, fishing close to the Derwent, and they've had these experiences. Nothing to gain by telling me these stories and being brave enough to go on film. And we, unlike, I wouldn't say every documentary, but a lot of documentaries that feature people who've seen unexplained things, ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, there's a bit of tongue-in-cheek and they get laughed at, and that's the reason it puts people off. But we've treated these people with respect. We've gone in with an open mind and we've got their accounts. And I'd do that with everybody, Howard. That's the only way to be with people. Otherwise, you're just going to lose all credibility.
Let's get up to speed with Wolflands, then, the documentary. I watched the latest version of the promo. Looks very good on YouTube today. If you want to watch a promotion, I think it's 2 minutes long. It's very good. We'll give you a complete guide to what this thing is all about. Have you been getting, since we last talked about the documentary, have you been getting more and more reports from people?
We've got more reports. COVID stopped us getting out there and interviewing the people. There's a guy up near, well, up past, I think it's near a pub called The Flask towards Whitby, is going to let us interview him. And he's travelling to work early one morning on a motorbike. And he claims there's two huge wolves sat at the side of the road. But the where it get becomes a little bit, I don't know, a little bit unnerving, he believes they smiled at him. Now, I realise there's going to be people listening to this and thinking, what? You know, and the bizarreness of seeing wolves, for one thing. I know North Yorkshire used to be prevalent for wolves, you know, but the actual concept of seeing the wolves. But this guy says these things smiled at him. Now, it's not too far away from the locations where the gamekeeper claims that he's seen the huge upright wolf. The three guys from Rotherham claim a similar thing. The gamekeeper's sighting was in 2002. The Rotherham guys, it was 2019, so it's recent. And all manner of things out in between. I mean, and I've a lot of respect for this gamekeeper and the, well, all of the witnesses and the, well, I'll call them the Rotherham guys until people get to see the documentary. I mean, they got trapped in the forest overnight. They couldn't leave. They wanted to leave, but they couldn't. There's only two of them gone on film. One of them has declined simply because it's just too traumatic to talk about what they claim they saw. And I'm just the messenger here, Howard. I'm not asking people to believe this. We're putting it across in a rational, sensible, as most sensible way we can. And we're not knocking on trees and howling at the moon. But nevertheless, we've got independent witnesses, as I keep reiterating, telling a similar story. And I believe there's a lot of truth attached to it. There's something there.
And there is mounting evidence. What we're saying is, and we're not saying this is definitively the case, you never say that, you know, we can't know that yet, but there is mounting evidence that there is something strange and cryptozoological in that forest, in and around that forested area of North Yorkshire that's been reported by people for years.
That's correct. I mean, we've recently found out, a good friend, Chris Wright, who's been helping us with the documentary, he lives very close and he finds himself working on a lot of the properties, the isolated properties, that it's known amongst locals that they say that they get walkers, I don't mean on a regular basis, and people going up to farmers saying they think they've seen a bear. And this has been known for years and years and years. They've caught a glimpse of a huge animal in the forest. We know there's deer in there, there's roe deer, and you know, but they're talking something else. But when you get to listen to these people, Howard, and hear their accounts, I mean, we've just got to attach a little bit of truth to it, regardless of what people... And we're not there trying to say, look, this is what they're saying, this is the truth. I'm just asking people to listen and take in the fact that none of these people know each other. These sightings are spanning literally decades and decades. And I've also done a lot of the folklore for Wolflands, and you'll find that a lot of this ties in. It's the names and everything. You can see I'm enthusiastic about it. I'm saying it's really interesting. I'm doing it. I suppose I would say that, but it really is. I don't think there's going to be one in the UK that's been done like this.
And it, you know, the thing that people have to get their heads around is, as we're seeing across the world with more and more sightings apparent in the news segment of the radio show just a quarter of an hour or so ago, latest Bigfoot sighting was a guy, end of January, police officer, California, sees something 7 foot tall with a strange head and a strange gait and chocolate brown hair all over its body. These things are international. And what people need to know is that it seems increasingly possible that it's possible for strange cryptid creatures to exist, not side by side, but in reasonably close proximity to where you and I live.
That's correct. And and it all seems linked as well. I mean, just if we dwell on this for a moment, I'll talk to you about the gamekeeper's sighting. And day maybe a few days, maybe a week before it happened, he was walking through the forest in the night with a relative. And literally a sphere of light the size of a football sprung up from beside his leg. Now, he's an ex-Marine, and he immediately thought that it was a tripwire flare and pulled his relative to the ground. And he expected the sky or the heavens to light up above him and squaddies, because these places, it's not far from Filingdales. It's not that far from, you know, so, you know, there's a bit of military involvement around there. But the strangeness, Howard, began after that. Himself and another gamekeeper claimed that they could hear a baby crying in the forest during the daytime, and every time they walked. I mean, that's more Bigfoot related stories, but that's not what he saw. And they'd walk to the edge of the forest where they'd heard this crying, and it had stopped, and it had start further in. Anybody familiar with countryside, we know that there's certain animals can sound like that, but bear in mind the nature of these guys' jobs, gamekeepers. They knew what they were listening to. So he'd been staying in an old farmhouse. It didn't even have running water, but because of what was happening in the forest, with the game and everything else, it had forced him to stay there for a few nights. And this particular evening, he'd lit a fire in the hearth, laid on the floor, his feet at the hearth, the glowing embers of the fire, and he woke up in the early hours and sort of, he didn't feel frightened, but he just felt on sudden high alert. I've been to this property, and it's interesting hearing him retell the story, which we'll get to in the film. But he said he saw something like a shadow past the window, and then a huge figure came to the window. We've measured the window. It was 41 inches wide, and I've sort of gone, we estimate it was about 38 inch wide, this thing. It was taller than the window, so we've done that one as well. So this is over 7 foot tall, and it's just looking down into the room. The only light, it was minimal, because it was just the glowing embers of the fire. And this guy's thinking, can it see me? He's looking at this incredibly powerful, huge deltoids. He's looking, he can see the stark outline of it. And he's thinking, I wonder if it can see me. He's below the sort of window frame, obviously, and it's really dark. So that was that night. He said the front door were bolted and the back door were barricaded up. And he said this thing was so big, he said it could have just come through a window, just could come through outside at wall. It were immense. But he was so intrigued. And when you see the guy on film, you anybody who gets to see it, you'll realise what I'm talking about. Just the persona of the man. He was so intrigued by what he'd seen. A few nights later, he set a tarp up on the ground about 45 foot away, Howard, and got down in a little ditch because he just felt he were being watched all the time and laid observing. Now, in 2002, because I've seen pictures of it at the time, this property had trees all around it, apart from this 45 foot stretch to the edge of some more woodland. He said in early hours at morning, this thing came out of the forest and went down the side of the farmhouse. What I find interesting is his explanation or his analogy. He said, if you'd have got a torch beam and ran it down the farmhouse, he says, that's how it moved. He says, I saw no movement from its legs. It just arrived. Now, I find that intriguing because we've had other stories similar, seen like they're running on some seamless track. He said it stood at the window. He said, but he felt sure that it was aware he was looking at it. A length of time passed. It went back into the forest. Now this guy's going to talk about his sighting on the film. He already has done on Wolflands, and we've got accounts. I don't know. There's probably seven or eight accounts from independent witnesses that have never been heard before. And Howard, honestly, they're amazing. Absolutely mind-blowing.
Sure, once I've been on here tonight, you will get more. I've got questions. Paul Sinclair's got answers. We're talking about strangeness of a deep and serious kind in East Yorkshire, North Yorkshire, and a whole area around that, an increasingly big area too. Okay, let's talk about big cats then, Paul, if you don't mind doing that. You sent me one picture that was taken recently that appears to be some kind of big cat. It's on my Facebook page, the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes, but there's been a rash of big cat sightings all over the country, including your area, lately. What's going on?
It's strange, isn't it, that, you know, as we get towards spring, I don't mean every year, but just around this type of sort of time, the cats seem to be seen. You know, there's a lot more sightings. Before we talk about that picture, Howard, I mean, there's been one on Well Lane Bypass on outskirts of Brid. Just a couple of weeks ago, guy with two dogs walking them at midnight. He walked them late. In his words, he says his dogs are a little bit feisty and that's why he does it. And he sent me a picture and an approximate size of the cat, which he's drawn as a kind of black lozenger. And it's crossed the road and gone up onto Waldgate, but that's just on outskirts of town. And he estimated, he said it was a cat. His dogs were going nuts and it weren't another dog. He saw it cross the road and just go up the bypass. All right, could be mistaken identity. I got a sighting, my good friend, we'll just call him Kez, he contacted me last week. And he's at Leven Bypass, which is about 11 miles from Bridlington. There's a petrol station there. And he's waiting to pay for his fuel. And he overhears a chap who was also paying for his fuel talking to the cashier. And, I said, have you had a good day? I think this old chap, well, I know he does because I've spoke to him. He goes there every day with his wife and they buy coffee. His wife sits in car and he goes for a walk. There's a disused road running parallel to the bypass, which sort of ties in with what I'm going to say. He said, I've seen a big cat. Well, sort of Kez's ears pricked up immediately and he sort of waited for this guy and asked if he'd mind telling him about it. He said, you know, excuse me, I overheard your conversation. Subsequently, he got his phone number and I've spoke to him. And this is a daytime sighting. His wife were close enough that he could shout her. So they both told me the story and they're walking this. He's walking this sort of disused road at side of Leven Bypass overlooking a ploughed field, deeply ridged ploughs. Furrows, he said, and he can see this animal about 200 yards away. He said, and it's walking like a cat, it's black. He said, you know what people say, if it sort of quacks like a duck. And he said, it's a cat, a Labrador-sized cat. So he shouted his wife who came and looked, and they both agreed that's what it was. So there's been another sighting at Buckton, and I think it was about 2 years ago. There were about six witnesses independently claimed that they'd seen this panther at Buckton. Now, for the listeners who are not familiar with the area, Buckton is about 2 miles from Bempton, 4 miles from Flamborough, you know, so we're all in approximate area. So these cats are being seen. I would think for anybody that says, what a load of rubbish, that they don't exist. And, you know, starting at least give a little bit of ear time for the people who are reporting them.
Because more people are. What about the picture then? The picture that's on my Facebook page.
Yeah, that's a frame capture, Howard, from moving footage. So I do have more of that. I think I put about 15 to 8. I don't know if that was of a light anomaly. I've got actual moving footage of that as it's actually looks like it's stalking along the field. I think my next job, we should have a bit more open space to move about, is to get some daylight pictures with a dog in the distance where I filmed that to show people the approximate size of this thing, because it weren't a normal house cat. It was quite big. I mean, I'm not talking about as big as a lion or anything silly like that, but it were big. I'd have estimated it to be the size of a spaniel dog. And we were on cliff tops at Flamborough heading towards Bempton, and I'm using a Pulsar, I think it's a QX38 thermal imaging camera. So that's just one frame grab from it. I'm not putting the footage on, Howard, simply because we'll want to use it for something at some later date. So I don't know what else to say about it.
We get an impression of what this might be from the still, and it certainly generated a lot of interest when I put it up there a couple of hours ago. Bempton, in many ways, the cliffs and the old disused RAF base there, are very much for you one of the epicentres, one of the places where all of this started. So I've got three listener questions about Bempton, and I'm going to try and tie them all together. The first one's from Martin. He says to you, Paul, I was intrigued reading your early work about the disturbing activities detected in the disused underground RAF bases in the normally idyllic Bempton near Scarborough, has any more research been done on this, presumably activities that may have gone there, for those who are not aware of these sinister events? And are these sites available for documentary filming, or are you now kind of barred from going there? In other words, you know, there were people who were using those disused sites, it appeared, for what might have been black magic or something like that. We don't know. Have you been able to do further research on these? I think Martin is asking. He's in Wakefield, by the way.
Well, Martin, hello. I think the first thing to say is I'd discourage anybody from going up onto the old RAF base. It's private. I think it's attracted attention, not necessarily because of me, but just urban explorers over the years. And we're not talking over the last few years, we're talking decades and decades. If you look on YouTube, you'll find lots of things where people have attempted to get in the place, and I discourage that. When I wrote
and
the first book...
And we have to say it's against the law, so please don't do it.
Yeah, well, yes. Well, when I wrote the first book, I did contact the farmer, and he allowed me to go on and take photographs, which were very kind of him. And the first book, I sort of played with the idea, because a lot of people have said that there were witchcraft and other things that had been practiced up in below the ground in the underground bunker years before, in the 70s and 80s and maybe early 90s. So the second book, I sort of got a little bit closer to the truth. And then the third book, I realized with what I'd started finding out, actually talking to people who in the know, should we say, that it were actually happening. Yeah, there were a satanic cult operating, be intermittently, up there. What the activities were, I don't know. It's maybe a rabbit hole. I'm not really that fond or keen to go down.
And I can understand why, but, you know, 30 years have elapsed, and those people who may or may not have been involved in such things, you know, may not even be around now. They might have left the area. They may never have been in the area in the first place. They might have come from outside, but it was something that Martin was interested in, and it's going to be difficult to investigate this further.
Yes, I think you'd struggle because, you know, it's been out of bounds for years and years, and there's, you know, and in a way, rightly so, because there's cattle graze on it in the at certain times of year. And if people went on breaking fences of that, they're only like 30 or 40 foot from edge of the North Sea, open cliffs where these livestock could end up going over, you know, so it's probably a good thing.
And of course, anybody doing that will be liable to prosecution. Now, Nick wants to know about the lights, these mysterious lights, an ongoing, strange, bizarre phenomenon reported by visitors, bird watchers, you know, lifeboat crews, people in passing boats, all kinds of people seeing lights there. Nick wants to know whether you think there is any sort of connection between the tic-tac anomalies, you know, those UFOs reported in the United States, and those lights seen over Bempton.
There could well be, you know. I mean, all of this could be connected, even. And the lights are something I sort of talk about with great passion, because obviously I can't deny what I've seen. Somebody said to me, do you believe in the lights? I said, no, because I've seen them. I know they're real. What they are, I don't know. I mean, they've been seen prolifically over the last few months. I've seen them myself. We've managed to get a bit of them on film. We took a psionics camera up there, if anybody's familiar with them. It's a really good low-light camera. And we managed to, a friend of mine, Amanda, managed to film them for 6 minutes. Now, if I can get a permission, Howard, I'll put that, you can share that and put it on the website or on your page. And the unusual thing is it ruled out a lot of things, the camera, because I put the thermal imaging camera on the lights at the same time, and they weren't giving off a heat signature. Not only that, the only thing that could see them was the psionics camera. I couldn't see them with the naked eye, and neither could Amanda. It was only when she scanned the sky with this camera that the lights became visible, which is interesting in itself. I'm not sure. It's difficult. When they appear, they don't fly from anywhere. They literally just turn on in the sky as though there's a light bulb hanging there.
Well, they appear to burst through the cloud in some cases, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they're below the clouds on a lot of occasions, and sometimes, I mean, the miles out at sea, but they can instantly appear, these lights. You see one, then it'll go into multiple of up to five. I have a report from, well, it's late 2020, and this guy rang me. It were in the early hours. Sorry, he messaged me early hours of Tuesday morning, and I picked I'm looking at the paperwork now, Gab, people. That's, I ain't got a brain that can just do. And he says, I'm sat in my living room of my parents, looking at the views of Bridlington Bay and Flamborough Head. It's almost 3:30 a.m., and I'm looking towards Flamborough, and I can see a row of 15 spheres of light in the sky just off the headland. Now, that's typical of what people report seeing. I mean, these people are all independent to me. All walks of life are reporting seeing these lights. And as you say, there's Coast Guard logs and lifeboat logs that go back decades to call outs. And I know we've done this, Howard, in previous shows, but 9-hour call outs, all night call outs, daytime call outs to people who've perceived they've seen distress flares over the sea. Multiple lifeboats from Filey, Bridlington, Whitby going out searching for a boat in distress or anything, and nothing's found. And the log usually gets put as a false alarm with good intent.
Mm. It doesn't explain, good that you are chronicling these things, because you know, the more reports and the more images we get, the more hopefully we understand. Jason in Ireland, Ree Bempton, has asked me this. You did an experiment. By the fence, isn't it? By the fence way at the edge of the cliffs there.
That's correct.
With watches that you left them for a while and they went haywire. They were all showing different times at the end of it. Jason in Ireland wants to know if you've done anything else along those lines, if you know any more about that.
I haven't, Jason. It became a little bit difficult because I had to go and check the watches. I used to check them probably twice a week. Basically, anybody who didn't know what I'd done, I'd got sealed containers and I put two watches, quartz watches, in each container at when I said the exact time, it's not forced up into the second, obviously, but then in plastic bags inside the containers and buried them at 400 paces up the headland. I started just with three boxes, and in the end I had four boxes. And I don't have the dates on me at the moment, but one particular morning when I checked these watches, a pair of watches had lost an hour of time, but they were still going. So it was a bit of a eureka moment. As I'm not a scientist, people, and I think anybody who's listening to me will know that, but it definitely told us something had happened. And I've not done it since, because it became increasingly difficult, because I could only really check them in the daytime. I needed light. And in the daytime, you've got people milling around a lot.
What we have to say, though, is it is very unusual for watches to lose an hour like that. You know, I've got too many watches. I'm obsessed by time because radio depends on time. Yeah. And, you know, all of my watches are cheap ones. Most of them are driven by batteries. And, you know, between them all, if I went and checked them now, they'd be 10 seconds out, you know, maybe half a minute in one case, depending on how cheap the watch is, but not an hour.
These were analog quartz, and they were an hour. Well, they were just under an hour. In fact, I've still got them. I've left others on cliff top, so somebody will find them one day and think, "What's happening here?" You know, they're not a threat to wildlife either. By the way, people, they are buried. So, just an interesting little experiment. I call it the time experiment, and wrote about it in the first book. And I hope that it maybe doesn't answer his question, but I haven't done anything else similar. But we've tried everything. We've took Geiger counters up there. We've tried lasers and seen if there's a displacement in the beam. I did that with Chris Turner. We'd had interesting readings on the animal deaths. I'm reluctant to say mutilations. It makes it sound a lot worse than it is. But we put a Geiger counter around the carcasses. We had some interesting readings with particularly the deer kills, not so much the sheep. I don't know why, but the actual wounds on these animals sort of ruled out normal predation when you've got ears that are cut off and not eaten, should we say, or bit, and, you know, eyes removed.
And we've been talking about these things for years in that area. And every time we talk, there's always a drip feed of more cases.
The cat, the thermal image, the frame capture that I've sent you the other day, Howard, about a mile from there, two guys walking found a sheep carcass. Only literally within days of this cat. And I knew it. Once I saw image, I knew exactly where it was. And I contacted a farmer friend of mine and I went and parked up. And I've been up. I've got lots of images. I was very tempted to post them today, Howard, but I thought I need your permission really first because they're a bit gruesome. But there's definitely two puncture wounds in this animal that look like they could be canine teeth.
So maybe a connection back to the big cats.
Yes, but then you sort of get thrown in other directions because I put gloves on, I opened this animal's mouth, and its tongue's removed. So there's no trauma to the mouth. I do apologise, people listening to this, because it sounds a bit macabre.
We have to say, while we're talking about these things, they may be slightly gruesome, so if you're made squeamish by this, tune out for a couple of minutes, but these things are ongoing.
So the tongue's removed, yet there's no trauma to the mouth or the face. It's laid on its left side and the right eye's removed. When I lift the head up, the left eye's removed as well. It's too big an animal for crows to have done that. And I say I've got all these images, Howard. I think I better send them to your email, and at your discretion you can decide whether you want to put them on.
As far as you know, are any official agencies? And I'm not just talking about the police here, taking an interest in these things?
No, because this particular one, I don't know the farmer, but I know the farm. I sort of visited it early morning. I've not even spoke to the farmer about this one. And originally in 2017, 18 and very early 19, I know the police were fully aware of what was happening with the livestock, the foxes, the badgers, the roe deer that I was discovering up there. I mean, and the police had been involved and done all-night stakeouts, but not managed to find anything. And you know, Howard, I don't think they will. I mean, not everything's got an unexplained phenomena label attached to it, but there's something very strange happening up there. You know, when you find these carcasses and you're finding, seriously, ears just sliced off. And people could say, oh, well, that could be human activity. I suppose it could, but you tell me anybody that could catch a roe deer.
And do these things with, as we've said so many times before, do these things with incredible precision. Paul, you sent me a video. Let's start with this, because some people have been a little puzzled by this video, as they've been telling me. I put it on my Facebook page, the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. It is a thermal camera image, a heat signature, shot at Flamborough. I think a lot of people will be familiar with Flamborough Head from the shipping forecast. A very prominent location. I think I've seen what is an anomaly here, but it appears to be a video taken with a heat camera of a car leaving a location and somebody getting into that car. And as they get into the car, something happens. Have I seen this right?
I did read the comments, actually, Howard, and I can understand probably why people aren't seeing it. I'll try and explain it a bit better. I did write, I don't know, probably 1,000, 1,500 words on the Truthproof webpage that accompanied that bit of footage. There's a little bit more footage. I only put about 15, 18 seconds of footage on as frame capture. But what happened, we'd gone for... Me and a guy called Peter from Bempton, we went for our walk that we're allowed to do on the cliff tops. And as we're coming back, a car went down the slip road towards the old Flamborough boat shed where the lighthouse used to be kept. Midpoint, it reversed onto a piece of hard standing. And that building in the footage, if ever anybody's looked at it, is, I think it used to be the old winding shed for the boats. It's never changed since I can remember. And the car's parked there, and three people got out of the car. And in the write-up, I do say, Howard, I think they were either on drugs or drunk, because the female with them fell down. There were two dogs, a boxer cross bulldog, This is what the thermal camera's telling me. You can't see them without the thermal camera, and a terrier. And I hope I'm not going to be too long-winded with this, people, but they walked down to the front of the lifeboat station, and I was watching them, not filming them at this point, but the dog's behaviour was unusual. They suddenly set off running, and this is 100 yards away from where the car was parked, and both stopped, and they're barking at something, and we just couldn't understand the behaviour. Didn't see another heat signature, but the dogs are clearly perturbed. These people stayed down there about 20 minutes. They were quite loud. In high spirits, shall we say. That's the kindest thing. And they set off walking back to the car. The dogs suddenly set off barking at the back of the car. The people are looking. And I said to Pete, I said, I think we've been seen. And we'd be about 200 yards away. But there's a... As he rightly said, he said, it's impossible. We're in complete darkness, and this thermal camera's not throwing light out. The only light is when I put my eye to the scope. So the people get in the car, and what you see is the last adult or male getting into the car, and the dogs are already in. Now, where it became interesting, because another light source, another heat signature appeared. Now, if you look at the film... Mm. Because to the left, there's a raised area, a bank at the back of the car. It's only about 3 or 4 foot. But to the left of the car, about 10 foot away, there's a glowing object. Can you see?
That's exactly what I saw. It looked like a lightning bolt, a small lightning bolt or something like that.
That
was
glowing
weird.
Object, if you look at the size of it, it's not that small, Howard, and... I don't know how big. It did look bigger when I first started filming it. I've got to add, sorry, when I first started looking at it, because I said to Pete, there's someone else there. I said, there's somebody watching them. It didn't look like a person, by the way, people. It looked round. And it's clearly on the ground. Now, I don't think it would have been anything like a rabbit or a fox or a badger. I could be wrong. But I don't think it would have hung around when them dogs were going mad earlier, 5 minutes prior.
Would the people in the car have been aware of it?
No, I don't think so. They were aware that the dogs were upset. These dogs went off barking on three separate occasions on their journey when they were down near the lifeboat shed. And then they went onto the beach and started doing it. And then when they got to the back of the car and they were... Something had disturbed and upset the dogs. So, I mean, it's not forced to be unexplained phenomena. I just find it very strange that this is clearly an heat signature, a thermal camera. That's what it does. It picks out heat signatures.
And whatever this is not the same colour as the cool surroundings. I think that's true, isn't it?
It's glowing. I think if you look at the footage, I don't know what compression rate is when you've put it on. If it might not be as clear as what it is when I've got it straight from the camera, but there's definitely an heat signature there. So I just thought it was of interest. Let's put it that way. If people want to say, "Oh, well, it could be a group of hedgehogs," tongue in cheek there, guys. But there's something throwing off a heat signature. Now I continued to film it, and I would think over a 5 minute period, the ground just goes back to normal. So I do have all that film. I just put 15 or 18 seconds on because I found it intriguing because it had to be something. And I suppose that's as much as we can say as well. It's just an unusual one.
Something I have to say, I watched it a few times, but people were confused by this, but there was something that may have been anomalous in that footage. That's all we can say.
I think so, yes. And on Facebook page where I put it, there's a few people commented, and there's some that are rock anglers who've said they've had a straight... I'll have to get speaking to them in a bit more depth because they said they've had strange experiences down in the cove whilst fishing. And one of them in particular, he said that he actually went over to a cave because he could hear people talking inside the cave. And I know which cave it is. It's on the left-hand side as you walk along the little Flamborough Cove. And it's only about 40 foot deep, if that. And he said, shone a torch, and there's nobody there, but he could hear people talking. It's a strange place. But, I mean, that's why I've managed to acquire so many accounts and strange, anomalous things are seen around that area.
It's a strange, wild and lonely place from my recollections.
It is. And, you know, other people will say, well, how come you see so much? Well, A, I don't see loads. Myself and Bob Brown, usually, we can spend, I don't know, all year up there or 6 months and see nothing. And then it happens. Then the strangeness happens. And another thing that intrigues me is the atmosphere change that people feel, not just with the light forms, not just with the cryptids, but lots of unexplained phenomena. They suddenly they feel like they're immersed into some kind of, I don't know, almost otherworldly feeling. Everything goes quiet. I mean, one of the witnesses who's in Wolflands, Jamie, she said that she went into the ravine. This is at the top of Flamborough Head as well. Walked down into the ravine with her friend Lee. They could hear geese flying overhead. And then all of a sudden, everything went silent. They couldn't hear the sea. They couldn't hear the birds. And she said, I think we better go. And they walked up the ravine, up the earth steps, onto the top. And that's when they saw this creature. They didn't come to Flamborough Head to see anything. They went back to their cottage and looked online because they were staying in a cottage and found my name and contacted me. You know, and there's no accounting for it. It's just plain strange.
Now, Paul, we're going to keep going after midnight. We've got 5 minutes before I've got a break for news. So I want to get into this. Another one of the pictures that you sent me, this is a still, is of an apparent UFO that looks most bizarre. This thing is illuminated, and the only way that I can describe it is it looks like a crab with pincers in the sky.
Yeah, this is a couple that contacted me. Once again, I didn't know these people. They just sort of reached out. They said they were travelling to their home in Humumby. Now, I've got some daylight pictures, Howard, and so I could maybe send you a daylight image of this because I had to take some medication to one of my daughters who lives very close, and I stopped and took some daylight images. And as they're driving along, they're looking in the direction of the sea in the distance, and they can see this huge, and they said it was huge. They said it, even though the picture doesn't look circular, they said this looked like a huge orange circle in the sky, in the night sky, with a hole in the middle of it. Then they went up the hill towards Humumby. It's called White Gate Hill. And when they got to the top, it was still there, but it had appeared to have changed shape. Now, it were well after sunset. And, well, they've seen this strange object. Interestingly, they're in the same area as well where people have reported seeing what I've written about called the Flixton Werewolf. There's burial mounds and all sorts of things up Whitegate Hill in the fields at the side of it, and it looks down onto the cars. I've jumped slightly there from the UFO, but yeah, that's just a strange anomaly seen over the sea. And once again,
it is weird, and I'm sorry to jump in, because the shape of it, I thought, well, first of all, that's maybe a helicopter, but it's illuminated, and the runners don't look like the runners that they have on a helicopter, which are, of course, along the sides. That's not the shape of this thing. Not a drone, because it's illuminated and a strange shape and bigger. So, you know, the question that remains is, what is this thing? If any of my listeners have an idea as to what this might be, I'm always pleased to hear from you, and I'll pass on your thoughts to Paul. But this has to remain a mystery.
Oh, I think most of these, you know, Howard, despite all the research, I'm not sure I'm any closer to an answer to any of it than any of your listeners. It's just the fact that I spend a lot of time in these places, and I've managed to gather a lot of information from good people who've been sort of, I would say, brave enough. I don't think it's too strong a word to say. I'm brave enough to step forward and say these things, because the fear of ridicule is a massive thing.
Less so now, though, don't you think? And certainly since you started doing this work, you've begun to get yourself featured in the newspapers, and you're doing more radio interviews, and you've got your own independent voice now with a new website, and with the documentary coming out, with more books. You know, you don't have to stay in the shadows. You can come out with this stuff now.
Yeah, I don't mind speaking about it. I mean, when I wrote Night People, which were about my own experiences, and that probably tells people why I'm so immersed in the subject, you know, I've not got no fear of speaking about it, but I just say to people, you know, because there's bound to be, for every person who believes that this stuff's real, there's going to be 20 that think it's a load of rubbish. Well, I just say to them people who think that it's a load of rubbish, just talk to me and talk to other people who are giving you these stories with the respect that I give you, because not all these people aren't all liars and fantasists. There's a lot of truth attached to this. And just because you might not have seen these things with your own eyes does not mean it's not real.
Okay. We're going to do 15 minutes after the midnight news. Thank you for agreeing to do that, Paul. Let's use the next 30 seconds just to tell people how they can connect with you, how they can make contact with you if they have something to tell you.
Right. We've got the truthproof.uk website. We've started collecting reports, and I've got a great friend, Don Lodge, who the webmaster, and he puts all the reports that I get on. And just in a few months, I think we've got 80 reports that you'll not find anywhere else in the world, you know, they're sort of unique. So if you like looking at UFO reports, cryptid type reports, they're on there. Some of them are brief, but nevertheless they are interesting. We've got a glowing review from Peter Davenport, who runs the National UFO Reporting Center.
Okay, well, that will do for starters. Then your new website will remind people about that at the back end of this. Not going to waste these minutes. We've got about another quarter of an hour with Paul Sinclair in the east of Yorkshire, talking about material you'll find in books like his Truth Proof series and his other work too. Okay, Paul, a lot to get into, not a lot of time to do it. We talked about the UFO. Let's get to a couple of questions from listeners here. Robin in the US. Oh, by the way, Mary in New Brunswick, Canada, just saw your email. Thank you for it with your big cat sightings. I'll read that when I finish the show. Thank you. Robin says, has Paul noticed a rise in cases over the last year? There seems to be, even though we've got COVID lockdown, all the rest of it, there does seem to be a steady stream of strange stories. They do not stop.
Yes, I have noticed that things seem to be a little bit more prolific. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know whether it's due to COVID and people are sat at home researching more and then looking to the skies, or, you know, I know we can only do limited exercise, but maybe we're just opening our eyes a little bit more. I don't think the phenomena's got any more prolific. I think people are starting to notice. People are waking up to the reality that these things are happening. These things are real.
And this question is allied to it from Robin. Robin says, if people are experiencing more strange events, which you and I think they are, is there one particular kind that shows up more often?
For me, I mean, obviously the lights over the sea, the lights on the walls, they're still being reported quite often. But for me, it's these cryptid sightings. And that was the reason we started the documentary Wolflands, because of these excellent witnesses. But since then, even more people are coming forward. And it's just hard. I got a report the other day. I've not spoke to the people yet. I'm waiting for somebody, hopefully, to get me a number to speak to the actual witnesses. But I'm told there's a group of people, one of them including a headmaster, that's allegedly seen something like what we're documenting in Wolflands. It's no good me saying what he's seen. I've not spoke to the people yet, but I'm hoping to. And that'll just be another one. I mean, the cryptid sightings seem to be more frequent, let's put it that way. And whether it's because I'm actively looking in and making my voicing my opinion and voicing that I want these reports, that could be part of the reason. But
I mean, part of it probably is if you look, you find. But that doesn't, you know, disallow the fact that if people are reporting them, then they're there to be found.
That's correct. Yeah, and what it is, people, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, I struggle with the idea that because this thing's been reported along the cliff tops of eastern North Yorkshire and down towards the Barmston Drain, if we're dealing with the same thing, you know, because you remember a few years ago, the beast of Barmston Drain, although a lot of those reports were taken, a lot of the stuff contained in them were taken from the Flixton sightings and so that's miles and miles away, but they sort of used those. But what am I saying?
Basically, you're saying that these things are ongoing, and I think we accept this point. I've got two questions kind of allied to each other about your most recent book, Night People, which is where you very bravely talk about your own encounters with strange things as a child and a young person and how they've impacted your life in ways that we can see today because you're doing this work. Jonathan, I'll ask you both of them together. So Jonathan basically says, anything new about all of that? And Richie in Ellesmere Port tells me a long story that I'm going to try and cut short. He says, I hope it's not too late to ask this question. It isn't. And thank you for it, Richie, in Ellesmere Port. He said, I had a strange experience when I was about 5. Early in the morning, 7 a.m., I was with my sister. And cut a long story short, I was sat up in the middle. And this is, you know, obviously in bed and bedroom, while everybody else was lying down. I noticed a dark shape appearing to walk up the stairs. The bed looked right out across the landing onto the stairs. As I watched, a perfect dark shadow of a man walked up the stairs, and I could see it was clearly stepping on each stair. As I got to the top of the stair, I dived under the covers and started telling everybody what I'd just seen. I remember my mum saying that I was quite scared by it. Well, when you're 5, you would be. Now, you having written Night People, are not going to be surprised by a story like that.
I'm not, and there's so many people got these accounts, which obviously stayed with Richie from childhood, and it's still vivid in his memory. And it kind of gives you an idea that there's a physical presence, although what it is, I don't know, because it's actually using the stairs. He's not talked about it floating or looking like some ghostly apparition. It looks like it's using the treads of the stairs. I assume that there must have been spindles so he could see it coming up these stairs, you know, the stair rods. No, it doesn't surprise me. I think everybody's got a report somewhere, and you know, you'll get other people. You'll get people sort of saying, you know, my auntie or my mum swears that she saw this, and she's a really steadfast, trustworthy person. And then the same person will say, but I don't believe any of that. And you don't know what's happening. It's hard to work out what's happening on any level when somebody comes out with that, because you want to turn around to that person and say, well, is your mum a liar? And they're going, well, no, she isn't. So, well, why don't you believe it? I'm not saying everybody's telling the truth and everybody's got it right and there isn't misidentification, but there's too many people, Howard, like Richie, who've got these stories to tell. I mean, I don't know how old Richie is, but obviously he's an adult.
Happened 45 years ago.
45 years ago, and it stayed with him so strong after all that time. You know, it tells you there's something real to it. He's sat up in bed. He's not dreamt it. It's not a lucid dream. So what it is, Richie, I don't know. And what I saw, I don't profess to know. But
the good thing is, Paul, you know, people like you are empowering people like Richie and people like me to tell our stories. I mean, you know, I might have told you before, and people think I'm nuts when I tell this story, but it happens to be true. I was 17, very happily living at my mum and dad's place in Crosby near Liverpool. And, you know, I lived in a very loving environment, and, you know, I miss my parents and that place every day. I had my nice big bedroom with my radio gear in there and all sorts of stuff. And one night I was about to go to sleep, and I had the bedroom door slightly ajar. And I looked at the frame of the door, and on the left-hand side, so I could just about see out to the landing there. No one around, mum and dad downstairs watching TV. They used to watch a lot of late-night TV. And there was a creature there that can only be described as a sort of cream-coloured version of a grey alien, with long fingers, very spindly body, long head. And this thing, for want of another word, noticed that I'd noticed it and suddenly leapt back behind the door frame, in other words, onto the landing. Yeah. It is the strangest thing, I think, apart from the ghost I saw once, that I've ever seen. And that's, you know, I could describe it to you now. It stayed with me, like Richie when he was 5, I was 17. That has stayed with me for all of these years.
And Howard, I mean, it's a brave thing as radio host, and you're coming out with that. And obviously, we're on a show called The Unexplained, so it's probably not surprising that you're
probably why I'm doing this.
Yeah. But like you said, it stayed with you. I mean, we don't have answers for this. There's a guy at Carnaby. I'll not say his name and his wife, but he was working on his property, and he'd left some floorboards up, and he literally heard the floorboards moving. He knew exactly, you know, everybody knows where certain things are in the properties when you're laid in bed. You hear that certain stair tread creak or whatever. And Buddy said when he leant up out of bed and looked onto the landing, he perceived that he could see a grey alien. He said, and it looked round and looked at him and then just sort of vanished, evaporated.
Well, that's the same experience almost.
Yeah, well, that's why it brought to mind when you were talking about that, Howard, yes.
So I've wondered all my life if I really did see something, and, you know, I was 17, but I think I maybe had the occasional glass of wine with my parents, but, you know, I wasn't imbibing substances. I was fully possessed of my faculties, and yet I saw that. And, you know, what we're saying here is that people in 2021 are empowered to be able to tell their stories that they may not have told before because people would think that they're crazy, and that's a great thing. Okay, we've just got a couple of minutes, so let's get to this then. What are you working on right now? Presumably you're working on the finishing touches to Wolflands, the documentary. And
we are.
Just give me a little taster of what might be new. What's coming up?
Well, I'm working on another book. It's probably about 75,000 words in. It's called More Things in Heaven and Earth. Truth Proof 5. It will be the last one I do for a while, Howard, because I'm a bit saturated. I think that'll be in five in just under 5 years.
So you need a break.
Yeah, so I will be keep collecting the information, and it's just ongoing. I'm not saying it with any stress here. I really enjoy what I'm doing anyway, but I just love interviewing people. I love getting to these locations. That's what it's about for me now. I mean, obviously, I couldn't have funded this years ago, but I'm in a position now where I can give this 100%. It's not an eight-hour job, this. It just never switches off. And anybody that's got any reports, I'll treat anybody that contacts me with respect and try and look into it, and well, just deal with it, do best we can. I'm all ears if anybody wants to send
me there. Absolutely, my grandmother used to say that. She used to say, I'm all ears. And the new website, very exciting, because you've got a whole chronicle of stories. You can click on individual stories going back more than a decade.
Oh, yeah, some of them are going back to 80s. I think there's a few on from 70s. But they'll be new to everybody's eyes, should we say, when you look at them, because they've not been shown before. I've not copied and pasted anything from anybody else's website, or everything's original that's on the truthproof.uk website. The books can be purchased on there if anybody wanted to. Just basically, there's information there. We've got a Truth Proof web page so I can be contacted. Just doing what we do, Howard. You know, I mean, it's difficult to say anymore. I'm not in this for money. I don't think I'll ever make any money out of it. I don't, you know, for amount of hours that I put in, it's all negligible, really. You know, and the cameras that I'm purchasing cost thousands of pounds, you know, just like the thermal camera and things like that. That's why I knew there was a heat signature. It's a proper heat signature that's left behind that car. And that can't be denied. I'm not saying that it's not an animal, be it a rabbit or something, but I honestly don't believe it is, because it wouldn't have hung around with the dogs barking and going crazy. It's just a strange one. Sorry to jump back to that, people. But yeah, I'm there to be contacted. If anybody's got any information, any sightings, that if they want treating with discretion, it's guaranteed. There's no names going to be used if that's what you need.
Paul, thank you for that. Give me the address of the website one more time.
Truthproof.uk, Howard.
And having done Paul's first ever interview for a podcast a few years ago, I know that he'll be back on this show. Very proud of everything that Paul has achieved. It just goes to show that if you have a message to put out there, something to say, then people will listen. Thank you very much for being part of my show. More great guests in the pipeline here at the Home of the Unexplained. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.